kingdom, a worldwide organization. And you say, he can't get it. He's just a simple Korean man. You know those fundraisers you see out in the parking lots? Last year, the Unification Church claimed they made about $30 million fundraising, selling flowers and candy and candles. That's only what the MFTs report. The local organization, like the one in Iowa City, it makes money too. That was not included in the report. It's estimated that there's a potential of them making about $1 million every 5 days in their fundraising effort. Telling you the money's going for spiritual things, for mission work, for building spiritual lives and such as this. Now, where's the money going? If you were from Bilibattery, Alabama, or near Mobile, you'd know that they purchased about $2 million worth of seacoast property down there on the Gulf Coast. They're going to build a seafood processing plant. If you were from Norfolk, you'd know that they owned a seafood processing plant there already. From Richmond, they owned some organizations there. If you were from Washington, D.C., you'd know they owned the Diplomats National Bank. If you're from New York City, you'd know they owned the Hotel New Yorker, a daily newspaper called Newsworld, the New York City Symphony, the Columbia Club, the Tiffany Building, palatial estates up and down the Hudson River. They own farms, several farms across the country. They own businesses. That's where the money's going, or the majority of it at any rate. You say, okay, let's stop them. Let's prevent them from doing that. They're misusing the money. Okay, if we shut down the Unification Church because they're misusing their money, because they've got investments outside of church-related organizations, because they have investments that they're holding in the name of a church and keeping it tax-free, then what in the world are we going to do with, say, the Roman Catholics, who own a phenomenal amount of property and land and businesses and buildings outside of church use? What about the Mormons, who do the same thing? What about the Southern Baptists, in which cases it has happened in our situation too. The problem is not going to be solved that way. Taking it to the courts, it's going to do no good. The problem is going to be solved when you stop and think about this. 70% of the members probably grew up in a Christian home. Their parking lot pitch is a Christian one. We as Christians are allowing this movement to grow and to thrive and to prosper. We're providing it members. We're providing it money. It's growing because of us. Why did I get involved? Hadn't my Sunday school experience been good enough? Well, I remember a particular Sunday school teacher who came in every Sunday morning for the 4 years I had him, read to us out of the Sunday school book. Even the teaching instructions said, explain to the students that they understand such and such. He read all those things to us. He did everything but teach us the Word. When I was 21 years old, I had a salvation experience at the age of 10 that was real. I accepted Jesus Christ into my life, and I believe it's real to this day. But when I was 21, faced with the new theology of this Unification Church, I still had the same understanding that I had as 10-year-old. And when you're 21, that doesn't cut it anymore. You've got to spiritually grow as well as physically grow. There's a spiritual growth that's got to come right along with physical growth. The problem is so large, it is so big. My work in Washington, D.C., directly with Richard Nixon, we did a support campaign for him that had Nixon stayed in office, he'd have remembered one group of people that supported him, one group of people who prayed for him, one group of people who fasted for him, one group of people who sent rallies to every state in the Union, one group of people who published full-page newspaper ads, one group of people who sent liaisons to Capitol Hill in his favor, Moon and his Unification Church. And in the last days of the Nixon White House, Moon and Nixon met together and prayed together. Is that close to winning the presidents? There are less than 10,000 full-time members in the Unification Church in America. Probably the number is right around 7,000. When I left in 1976, the number could not have been more than 4,000. So I'm allowing them to have nearly doubled in size since then, and I'm sure they haven't. The group here in Iowa City probably has less than a dozen members. The group in Atlanta, Georgia has less than 20 members. Now, in areas like New York City, Washington, D.C., California, they have large concentrations there. But full-time membership is less than that. And what does that tell us? A lot of people breathe a sigh of relief and say, boy, I'm glad there's not 100,000 or a million or however many you thought there were at first. But stop and think about it. Less than 10,000 people make $1 million every 5 days. own phenomenal amounts of property and business concerns across the country, are affecting the likes of presidents and senators and congressmen, are having an impact on our country spiritually. I picked up a newspaper in Albuquerque, New Mexico the other day. I was out there at Glorieta. I picked up a paper, and one of the headlines across the top of the paper said, Moon Paper Flourishes, or something like that. And I read the story. You see, there's been a newspaper strike in New York City. One of the few newspapers that is still being printed every day is a newspaper called News World. And if you did not know that News World was a Unification Church newspaper, you'd have no way of telling outside of knowing that the editors are Unification Church people. It seems their advertising increased 1,000% in 10 days. Their circulation increased 600% in the same period of time once the newspaper strike started. And one of the editors of the newspaper said, "We've been praying for a miracle, and this is our miracle. Our newspaper will now make it because this miracle that God provided in the form of a newspaper strike in New York City." There are people we have to be concerned about, but how are you going to react when you meet them? You're sitting at a parking lot here, or in an intersection here in Iowa City, and one of them runs up to you while you're sitting in your car, and they got a smile on their face, and they poke their head and that flower in there right as you're sitting under the steering wheel and say, "Hi, buy a flower for Christian missions." How are you going to react to them? Going to roll up the window on their arms, or slam the door in their face, or tell them they're going to hell, or be mean to them, or rude to them, or something like that? Heavens, I hope not. Certainly if you're a Christian, I hope not. That's not Christian. It's not loving to reject people in that way and to be rude to them. No one has the right to be rude to anyone like that. You've got to consider these people are sincere. They believe what they're doing is right. We live in a country that tolerates religious freedom. I can remember time after time when I would direct fundraising teams or something like that and have one of the members come running up to me at the end of the day or something and put a piece of cake or a pie or something like that and say, this kind lady today who didn't buy a flower gave me this and said, you know, she said she'd be praying for me, or she was so kind, she was so Christian. That was the unique person they met that day. It certainly should be the other way around. Because see, it seems that we as Christians, in fact, the other day, an interesting situation occurred to me in Atlanta. I was the fourth car back at an intersection. A girl was going from car to car to car, passing out something. And I thought, I'll bet this is Unification Church. It was hot. I had my air conditioning on and my window rolled up. And when she came to my window, she leaned down and she mouthed to me through the window. She said, "I'm not a Mooney." And I thought, first of all, that's interesting. She's telling me that. And so I rolled down my window. Now, she turned out to be a communist. That's what she turned out to be. But the impact of that statement is she first thing she told me she wasn't a Mooney. You see, people had rejected her. They had turned her off. They wouldn't talk to her. They turned the other way because they thought she was a Mooney, not because she was a communist. So how are we treating those people? You have something to offer them that nobody else outside of Christians have to offer. There is love in the Christian church. God has not left the Christian church. And I have heard Moon say that. He is not replacing the Christian church with the Unification Church. I have heard Moon say that. It only takes a spark to get a fire going. Oftentimes our churches are so cold that there's not even a spark there. Is it any wonder in some of the churches I have gone to that our young people leave? Why do people join a Unification Church? 9 times out of 10 they'll tell you because they were loved there more than they've ever been loved anywhere else. Love. If there's one banner the Christian should be waving, it should be that of love. And oftentimes we come so caught up in ourselves that something with a theology that gets so far off the track of what Christianity is really all about can out-love us. The love of the Unification Church becomes a very binding thing. You become very dependent, and I don't believe it to be God's love or the complete essence of what God's love is about, because God's love is a liberating thing, not a binding thing. I spent so many hours counseling with people who wanted to leave, simply reminding them of their responsibilities. They had to stay. Their ancestors were depending on them. You see, they have to pay the price of their ancestors' sins, not just their own, their ancestors' too. That's a lot of responsibility. Moon burdens them with a lot of responsibility in that form, and a lot of fear too. We've got something to offer. Now, I have gone a lot
longer than I ever intended to. The only reason I could come out of this organization, I sincerely believe and will never deny, was because I was saved when I was 10 years old. Now, something about salvation, it, number one, is not conditional. I sincerely believe you don't lose it. I wasn't saved from only my past, but I was saved from my future as well. Did God lead me into the Unification Church so I could come out and tell you about it today? I don't think so. I don't think God would have put my family through the suffering that we went through the heartbreak, through me running from my parents trying to kidnap me, through all of this. I don't believe in that kind of a God. But I believe in the kind of God that can take any experience you might have and can turn that and use that for His own good if you'll let Him. And I think in a dramatic way He's been able to do this with my experience. I don't plan to be an ex-anything for the rest of my life. But I think it's important right now that we know what's going on. Not what the Unification Church believes. If you don't remember a word of that, that's not important to me. But the problem will be solved in your church or in you as an individual. Nowhere else. The government can't stop it. And we shouldn't even try to force them to stop it. Once they try to stop that, what's going to prevent them from stopping Baptists or prevent them from stopping Catholics or prevent them from stopping anything someday? If we're not careful, we will set precedents that will bring about our own demise. But if our churches become the loving organizations they should be, if we as Christians become the loving people we should be, if we become involved and know our theology and know the Word and know that compass that has been proved and used time and time and time again to get to the goal, if we'll rely on that, you'll get there. But outside of that, you won't. I came out on my own, pretty much, around Christmas 1975. Found out Mom and Dad had hired deprogrammers. I was home for my brother's wedding. I snuck out on Christmas Eve, running from my parents for fears that they would kidnap me. I arrived in LaGuardia Airport Christmas morning, 1975, and faced this situation. I realized I no longer could depend on Mom and Dad. They were hiring people to kidnap me. I realized I could no longer do anything outside of the Unification Church. I didn't have any money. I didn't have a college degree. I didn't have a job. I was totally dependent. The same way I was when I was 6 years old. I had to have Mom and Dad to provide my housing, to provide my clothes, to provide my food, to provide my direction each day. I'd become simply like a child again. And I had a friend of mine come back from a Barrytown training session who told me in no uncertain terms that if Moon ever asked him to do something as drastic as kill his parents for this movement, if it was Moon's instruction, he would do it. Now, that's an outlandish example to use. I realize that. I'd never have known Unification Church to be violent, ever. But is God in something like that? Did my friend have a relationship with Jesus Christ or a relationship with God at all? That he would let someone else make that decision for him? I don't think so. And they're highly successful, to the tune of about an average of $200 a day. Most of these people, most individuals, can make about $200 a day in this selling. And I know a girl who raised over $1,000 in 24-hour time period selling flowers. Unification Church last year reported close to $30 million of income. Now, that's only the mobile fundraising teams. That doesn't include what the Iowa City Unification Church or the Atlanta Unification Church or any of the local Unification Churches raised for their own funds. For the national projects, about $30 million was raised. And I told you where most of that money goes. Phenomenal amount of money that they're raising. Other questions? Yes? I asked them if they were using any names outside the Unification Church here. They told me no, that it was strictly going as Unification Church. They'll often use what's called CARP, or College Association for the Research of Principles, on college campuses. I don't think they're using it here. At least they said they weren't. In different cities, in your more major cities, Washington, D.C., New York City, Los Angeles, they begin to use a lot of the front organizations there where they have much more viable organizations. That's where you'll find more of the front organizations rather than here in the central United States where they don't have a lot of activity. They will simply usually just go as Unification Church.
I was approached by two different members saying they said Christian Youth.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it wasn't.
Yeah.
They do go.
Yeah, they'll they often name a lot of their organizations very similar to organizations we're used to hearing about. Like the Freedom Leadership Foundation in Washington, D.C. sounds like Freedom's Foundation, which is a very viable, worthwhile organization. Or, I had some others, their front names that they use. They have a group called, their choir is called New Hope Singers International. Well, there is a reputable, 100% good group called New Hope Singers, but not New Hope Singers International. So often name things very similar to things we're used to hearing. They have one group in California called they're using the name Judaism in it. I can't remember, but it's very close to a Jewish organizational name that they reach a lot of Jewish young people through these kind of things. And they'll tell you that they're Christian. And the two that were there tonight sincerely believe they are Christian, but they can't, if they've had a salvation experience, then I believe that essentially they are saved. What they are involved in has nothing to do with that. But their theology won't, if you joined and you weren't a Christian before you joined, you wouldn't be a Christian by joining Unification Church. They simply do not teach Jesus Christ is divine. They simply do not teach he provided, that he failed is their basic teaching. That he was human. John the Baptist failed him. They get into all kinds of outlandish things.
You said like there's 12 other people that are Christ. What's so different about Moon?
He learned from the mistakes of the others. He's the last one in the process. The reason this occurs in Korea is that you got to go back and look at the Korean situation. They have been turned upside down in that country so many times. They've been ravaged by wars. They've been looking for almost a Moses figure to lead them out. And when Christians came in initially around the turn of the century, the Christians made a lot of unfortunate mistakes. They required that when someone joined the church, that, you know, when you became a Christian, that means that you suddenly had to start wearing Western clothes. You had to eat with a spoon and fork. You had to drop all of your Korean customs. And so you couldn't be what is considered an indigenous Christian. And thus it alienated a lot of people against Christianity right at the beginning. Or it forced people to try to mix the two. Koreans have always had a traditional thought. They've always been a very highly moral, industrious people. If you look at today's Korean Christian, he's probably the most faithful Christian that there is on the broad general scale. But when Moon lived with a man in the late 40s who also claimed to be the Christ, Moon picked up a lot of his theological thoughts from this man. And the 12 or 11 or so, there's some very minor ones that preceded him that didn't really get off the ground. Moon has been successful because he took it outside of Korea real quickly. He formed what's called the Holy Spirit Association for the Unification of World Christianity, which is the formal name for their organization, in 1954. So in essence, it's only been around 24 years. Now, that's not much time. In 1957, he sent the first missionary to Japan. In 1959, he sent the first missionary to this country. So he expanded it. He provided a real broad base for it right off. And because of the situation in Korea and a lot of the political situation, he was able to take advantage of. His group thrived where others didn't. He's a very wise, coy, clever man. Not exactly a very warm, loving person to be around. But he knows his stuff. And he can read the public reaction to things very well and knows just what to do. And he's very good with his timing and things like that. He's probably a lot wiser than the others, I imagine.
What's going to happen when he dies?
That's probably a question I think everyone is getting ready to ask. Good question, because they've got it incorporated into theology. He's going to die. He's only human. Now, see, as we talked about in the earlier lecture, they make an effort to make Jesus simply human. That Jesus had a physical father, just like you and I. And so Moon, in coming in Jesus' stead now, is also simply human. And that he will die as well. That life, this physical life, is only to serve as a cocoon stage for the spiritual body. and that once you have perfected through the physical body, then you shed the physical body the same way the butterfly has shed the cocoon in order to develop more perfectly. And they believe that the death of Moon will only simply indicate that he has just passed from this stage into another. Death won't affect this organization very much because it is so well founded. Most of the members have never seen Moon. He remains fairly aloof. If you had never lived, Moon's been living in New York for the last 5 years. He and his family is there. And if you weren't in that area, you probably would never have seen him. He remains fairly aloof. And even if you're in that area, oftentimes you don't get very much opportunity to see him. So their day-to-day lives aren't necessarily affected by him personally. So when he is physically gone, I see the organization perhaps suffering a little bit because he's a very wise leader. But as far as fizzling out, I don't think it will.
You said he was the last one of the Institute. Does he have a second command?
Well, one of his sons will take over as leader of the movement, I'm sure, just because of the importance of the heritage and lineage. There are several second lieutenant kind of persons. One of them is a man named Neil Salone, and president of the Unification Church of America. Another one's a man named Mr. Kamiyama, Samu Kamiyama. He's the financial minister, I suppose, of the organization. Another man's named Bohi Pak. He's the political man that's doing a lot of the work in this country. If Moon died without a designated successor, and I'm sure he's already designated one of his sons to be the successor, then there could be a power struggle. But if Moon is designated, I'd rather imagine they will follow Moon's designation. There could be a split. Look at what happened to the Mormons after Joseph Smith died. Now, they split into two, well, RLDS and LDS. There's two very different, or in fact, there's even another group split off of one of those. So it's possible to see this group splinter, but I don't think we'll see much of it. They're so bound in unity is their theme that I don't think we'll see them split. Other questions?
Does yes. he really, truly believe he's the Christ, or what does he think?
Well, that's a good question. Moon was born, I can't remember, I've said this, I've spoken three or four times today, so I can't remember if I've told this group this or not, but Moon was born in 1920 in what is now North Korea. He raised a Presbyterian. He claims to receive this revelation. There's things that he claims happened that just don't add up with when you look at what happens. Between 1936, when he received the revelation, and he had the next 9 years, he said, to discover essentially all the truth that man needed to know to free himself. He found time in that nine-year period to get a degree in electrical engineering. He found time to marry and have a child, and yet develop the essential truth of mankind. Things just don't add up right. Today he definitely believes it, I'm sure. But then again, I have been guilty many times of convincing myself of something that was true just simply because I wanted to believe it was true. And I think this has happened in his case. So he has simply convinced himself of it. Because the movement has grown just phenomenally. When you think that he only had six members in 1954, they were living in a cardboard shack. And today, he's 24 years later, he affects national leaders. He lives like a royalty. As far as he's concerned, this is evidence to him that he is the Christ. And has just only confirmed it in his mind. Before we go any further, you all have a little white card. Let me tell you what the little white card is for. There are any questions you'd like to ask? Yes. Go ahead. Well, that's a really good question, because they're faced with that problem. The Jews that join this movement usually end up on a guilt trip, because Moon tells them that it is their people that caused Jesus to fail. Jesus could have accomplished his mission had it not been for those bullheaded Jews at the time. And so the ants and the burden of that responsibility falls directly on them because of their Jewish heritage. And so they come under a great deal of persecution or feel of burden because of this. But the divine principles right now are written to appeal to Christians. But they are being rewritten right now for about five different categories of people, the Jews. You know, quoting something out of the New Testament does nothing for a Jew. It adds no substantiation to anything. But if you quote out of the Torah or out of the Old Testament, that is what they consider to be substantiation. And so they're going to write these divine principles based in that as being substantiation. Now, the Old Testament or the New Testament does nothing for a Muslim. But the Quran is their basis of truth and what they base a lot of their truth out of. The divine principles are being rewritten right now using strictly the Quran as the basis of their belief. It's being, so this is what they're doing. Yes, they have been burdened now because they say what they've had to do is convert. First of all, you have to first of all become a Christian and then you can join the Unification Church. You know, they've got, this is the process they say that first, they've had a sort of double process here. And this is why they come to the Christian first, I suppose. And because the Christian world is basically centered in the Western world, and the Western world has certainly been more or less the leadership in the world. This is why the main impetus west and to the Christians. They're beginning to spread out like crazy now. And you'll see less and less of them on the streets. They're gonna come more submerged below the surface, less fundraising. As they bought these profit-making organizations, they don't need to fundraise anymore. And so their need to fundraise is diminishing a lot, but believe me, they'll still do it as long as there'll still be people who'll give the dollars. That's the fastest, quickest, highest profit out of every dollar they raise, considering living expenses, food, clothing, shelter, expenses for products that they buy, about 80 cents is profit on every dollar. This is how they don't believe you're serving God unless you're suffering for Him. How do you suffer for God? It means you skip a meal occasionally. You don't have to have that extra pair of shoes. You don't need more than two or three pairs of clothes. You're more than willing to sleep on the floor. You're not serving for God unless you're suffering for Him, they believe. They do without everything, a lot of the creature comforts we feel like we can't do without. And this is why they can be so financially successful too. There's not a, they figure they can feed and take care of a member of the Unification Church for a dollar a day. A dollar a day. And that includes everything. That's all expenses. That's their goal, to keep it at around a dollar a day. That's why starchy food, by the way, is very inexpensive usually and very filling. That's why there's a lot of starchy food, keeping expenses down. So these things do occur. Very little. Kind of like my parents used to give me an allowance occasionally, it was never very regular and never very much, and it's about the same thing. They do occasionally have a little money of their own, but they turn in every cent each evening to the Unification Church. I mean, when they're out fundraising, to their fundraising team leader. Although, if you find someone leaves the Unification Church, you'll often find that they'll leave at the end of a very successful fundraising day. It happens a lot. It really does.
How did you get to become a liaison to the White House?
Well, it was, I certainly was, it wasn't an earned position that I got. It was having been in the right place at the right time. I was sort of drafted to this choir Moon has called New Hope Singers International after being in the movement only 2 months. Now that's highly unusual in the first place, but because I'd had some choral experience in my life, they needed people who knew something about choral music to be part of this choir. So they sent me off there really before I was ever a very effectively established in the movement. While I was there, I met the president of the Unification Church of America. He and I became good friends. He realized I had a lot of political background, and he moved me from the choir then to the political organization in Washington after I'd only been in the movement 7 months. Highly, highly unusual that would ever happen. It's just a place of, you know, just being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, what I'm asking, I guess I didn't...
misunderstood you, perhaps.
You know, it seems, I thought that, you know, it might seem that you were either put in this position by others who saw that you had a talent, knowing background of politics, that you would be able to use with the unification church policies. And, well, whether your position as a liaison was a higher, you got paid a fee for that.
Nobody in the Unification Church draws a salary. But you all live together communally. It's like living together in your family as you're growing up. Mom and Dad don't split the paycheck with you, but they just provide everything. And so it's the same thing in the Unification Church. You never draw a salary, but you know when you need something, you go and express your need. Now, when I was working as a liaison, most of the kids you'll see don't in the Unification Church don't dress just real nicely. They don't have a lot of clothes. But when I was doing political work, because it was important that I have nice clothes and have a certain appearance, and I had all those things because it was important. Because of the kind of work I was doing. Yeah, they saw in me, because I'd had former political activity, that I could effectively incorporate, be effective for them on Capitol Hill, because just knowing the political ropes a little bit helps. And that was the main reason, I guess, I was plugged into that position.
Did they have someone in your position before?
No, it was a newly created thing, because we had a big leap forward when Nixon became very receptive to us. And very receptive to our support of him. We had just doors open widely, so a lot of people were sent to Washington at the same time I was. And it was a newly created thing. And they're still pretty active in Washington, D.C. They're pretty much, they come on the basis and auspices of being anti-communist, right-wing, pro-military establishment. That's pretty much their where they stand, which is, in some camps, is a very popular stance in Washington, D.C., especially with the Pentagon and those types. Yes.
When you look back, can you see situations where God really protected you, even though you were involved, that would have made things worse?
I feel like he never let go of me. I guess when I look at the whole situation and go back and line it all up and see how somehow God's going to use all of this experience. I'm sure that I was protected from some things. Had I have stayed in Arizona for a year and a half and become totally grounded in the theology, I might have lost my ability to, you know, to really act on my own or think for myself. I never really lost that ability. I never really came to a point that I was totally willing to accept someone else's leadership. I always had a, because my work was always involving politics and doing my own kind of thing, I never was really tightly clamped down on. And I guess I'm really glad that they never did anything to really break my spirit. And I guess in that sense, I was protected. I know kids who have come out today who, they're it's sad because their spirit was broken. And they're out, but they can't even make a decision for themselves anymore. They became so dependent on the church that when they're out, they're just dependent on somebody else now. And so I think, yeah, God really protected me from that experience. But it's not that it wouldn't have happened to me. I had things gone just normally, like was with the rest. This is the case with deprogramming. Why it is so very tragic. After a person has become so very clamped down on an Unification Church, and deprograms come in and kidnap you out, they jerk you out, they hold you, they force you to leave the Unification Church. Oftentimes it's brutal in some cases. It's a shock treatment experience. These kids come out after having that Unification Church experience and being shocked out of the movement. There's been some suicides, kids coming out. I know a girl who came out 3 years ago, about the very same time I came out, through deprogramming. Her parents were socialites in the Dallas area. They paid a phenomenal sum of money for deprogrammers to go in and get her out. She was out for 2 or 3 years. In fact, she did some things kind of like I'm doing, but she never reestablished herself spiritually, ever. She was shocked out emotionally. She rejoined about 6 weeks ago. She just one day disappeared, and they found out she's back. And I can tell you countless cases of kids who have been deprogrammed who will go back because they never eventually ended up developing that relationship to God, that personal relationship that they had to have. That is the anchor. The deprogramming doesn't offer that. And so this is my big stance against deprogramming. And I get lambasted by a lot of parents who have opted for deprogramming to get their children out. But in some cases it works, but in most cases it does not.
Was there any pressure? Do they pressure a person after they've left to try and get them back in?
Well, yeah, they do a lot of pressure. In a sense, I rather imagine, I'm sure they read the notices that I was going to be here tonight. And I'm sure they contacted the national offices, Chris Elkins, and they're going to say, yeah, Chris Elkins, everywhere I go, someone, you know, the Unification Church person shows up or something like that. It's not unusual at all anymore to have them show up. They think it'll intimidate me to have me there. That's the kind of pressure through intimidation that they're trying to offer me. I don't feel my life is threatened. I don't feel like they're going to drag me off and mug me or kill me or something like that. In fact, if for some strange reason here in Iowa City tonight I was mugged or murdered or something, I know my mother's going to blame it on the Unification Church no matter who does it. And so, and in the sense of public, because I'm so very public, the public would blame it on them too, probably. So in a sense, it's better off as far as they're concerned that I'm healthy and alive, I suppose, because they would receive a lot of bad press over it. Because if there's any suspicion about it, they would be suspected because of just the nature of the press and the nature of a lot of people who know what I'm doing. They sent out a mailing, not long ago, it's been quite a while back, I suppose, that listed, they went through tracing religious persecution throughout history, and they named three or four specific people today who are threats to religious liberty, and I happen to stand in the ranks of one of those people who is the greatest threat to religious liberty in America today. And they sent this out to people, pastors all over the country, hoping that that would discourage them from, you know, ever using me. Well, I probably got more invitations to come and speak out of that letter than I did out of any promotional piece that we've ever done through the Home Mission Board. And so, and since they don't do things like that, for a while, I was in Washington, D.C. one time, they print an article in the paper there that was really libel. I probably could have sued for libel because it was just flat untrue. They accused me of being everything from a psychopath to deranged to out furthering my own political goals. But they would love to tie me up in a court battle. I wouldn't be able to go out and speak. I wouldn't be able to talk to other people about it. Inside of this last year, I have reached in groups like this. Now, I often speak to groups about this size. It's not unusual for me to speak to a group the size of, about 6 weeks ago, 20,000 in an arena in North Carolina. It's not unusual for me to do, you know, television or radio, which reaches, you know, millions of people in some cases. We've reached a phenomenal amount of people, making them aware. Unification Church would like nothing to do more than to tie me up in a court battle where I would stop doing those things. So, when I testified to the House International Organizations Committee, I don't know if any of you ever watched the Burt Lance hearings or anything like that, but it was a lot like that. The pressure, the cameras, the lights, the questioning, because here I was effectively tying, and I know a lot of information that ties Moon and Tongson Park together. And it was funny that every time there was a break in the questioning or there was a pause or something like that, the press would come running over and ask me questions. Well, are there any Unification Church members here right now? Is the leadership here, or have you seen them, or what are they doing? Well, they were sitting right there behind me. In fact, I could have reached back and touched two or three of the top directors of the Unification Church in America that were sitting there, but were kind of there incognito. I recognized them, but no one else in the room did. In fact, the funny thing, I first went in there to testify. I walked into the room, my legs were just like rubber. I didn't think I'd be able to stand up. I was scared to death. And I walked in, and the whole audience, the first people I saw when I walked in, it was full. It was Unification Church members, people I knew, but no one else realized it but me, that's who was there. And so I walked in, and here I was sitting down, and I could reach back and touch. I could reach back and touch the guy who told me he'd kill his parents for this movement if it ever became necessary. You know, these kind of people, I thought, oh, good grief. And so they opened the session. I had an opening statement, and just got ready to start reading the opening statement, and three bells rang, which mean all the congressmen and senators must go and vote. So they had to recess the session for 15 minutes and said, Mr. Elkins, just please wait here for us. We'll be right back. Here they all were sitting right there. I thought, what am I going to do? I was scared to death. And I remember thinking, and just praying, I said, Lord, if you just get me through this one. You know, this, I'm not going to ever do this again. And then I just felt compelled. I thought, and just the thought came to me that I can't be scared of them the rest of my life. I can't be afraid of them. So I simply got up and shook hands with every one of them sitting on the front row, which of course intimidated them. They didn't know. There was no problems from that point on. And just greeted them with, that they knew that their presence they thought was going to intimidate me. And in a sense it did right at first, but we sort of reversed the tables on them afterwards. And so from that point on, I haven't had a whole lot of difficulty with them. The President of the Unification Church came and visited my boss at the Home Mission Board recently, which in a sense, is kind of a feather in my cap, I suppose, that I've had such an effect that the President of the Unification Church of America will come and tell us, my boss, that they think we're horrible, what we're doing, and such as that. It indicates to me that we are having an effect. And so I'm glad to at least to know that they are aware of what we're doing. And but you've got to be real careful doing this kind of stuff, that I don't stir up enough interest in one of you to make you want to go to one of their weekend workshops. See, this is what, you know, if I don't have enough time to tell the whole story, I don't want to tell any of it at all. Because creating an interest in someone's minds without solving their questions only feeds their fires. And so, and oftentimes, nothing could be more tragic, as far as I'm concerned, than to learn that one of you joined Unification Church after hearing me speak. I don't think I've offered you any material to make you want to join. In fact, some things we didn't talk about, you know, if you join, Moon's going to marry you to somebody that you probably don't know. The essence of the movement is, you know, you get married in the movement. After being in 3 years, Moon selects you a mate, and you get married. And they believe these marriages are divine. They're God's marriages. You have perfect, sinless offspring. These kind of things, which, you know, if you know at first, you're probably not going to get involved in the first place. So I'll feed you enough of that information, perhaps to keep you from, solve your curiosity in it. But at the same time, the purpose in being here tonight was not to fill you up with knowledge on the Unification Church, as to make you aware of your own faith and how important it is. And your own knowledge in the Word, learn how to feed yourself. Don't be dependent on someone else feeding you all the time. Any other questions?
I really appreciate your advocating that we love that. This winter, when I was speaking to someone, I was warned by clergy that we are not to accept them into our homes, and because they are the Antichrist, and where it says in the Bible, you know, mm-hmm. not to accept them into your mm-hmm. home or wish them well in their
world. Right.
And I was even told that if I had any of their books in my home, that opened my house to Satan.
Mm.
Now, can you give me some feedback?
I think that in response to that, my attitude about it is, first of all, we've got a natural curiosity, human curiosity, about things like this. And I'm often afraid that I will stir up curiosity in you or something like that, in which will lead you then into wanting to get to know them better. This is not my purpose in doing this, but no, I don't ever believe we should ever condescend to them to the point that we are encouraging them by buying. You know, a lot of people say, well, I want to talk with them long enough, I'll just go ahead and buy one of their flowers, and that way they'll talk to me for a few minutes or something. No, don't do that. If all you can say, I think all the Lord expects out of you is simply to be willing. If they walk off and leave you standing there, they have opted to leave you, and they bear the responsibility of that decision. I don't feel like you do. Every time we turn on our TV sets, I think we open our homes to satanic invasion. Every time we do a lot of things, having a divine principle book sitting on your shelf, I don't think necessarily makes your home or your dorm room or whatever particularly open for satanic influence. It's what you do with the book, the availability you might make it for others. I don't advocate getting a book. If you want to hear the whole Divine Principle Lecture Seminar, then I'll come back and teach the whole place here, the whole Divine Principle Lecture Seminar, just so you can hear it, if it's that important to you. I think if you are strong in your faith, and if you know that Jesus Christ is Lord, this stuff is not going to have any effect on you. I really feel like it will not. I really feel like you can stand behind the cross, and it will hold you firm. You don't have to be afraid. And I think by having an overreaction fear to them feeds their fires again. Not to invite them into our homes.